Welcome to a very special edition of the Tireless Den podcast. I've literally just made up a title for it. We're going to call it Tactics Extra, which probably isn't the best title, but that's what we're going with
nice.
This particular moment in time. I'm joined not just by my regular co-host Ross, but we've also got Tom and Ryan, who are no strangers to a Tireless Den podcast. Young guns, if you like, who have got a very keen eye for tactics, along with Ross. So we're gonna kind of talk. They've got three topics that they want to talk about, and kind of historical listeners will remember that we had we used to do like a round table, and this is kind of like a round table of tactics. So it should be pretty interesting. Should be pretty meaty. Tom, let's go to you first, mate. Let's have a little chat before we begin the proper, you know, in-depth stuff. Tom, if this podcast was a style of football,
here we go.
What do you reckon it would be?
Oh, a style of football. It's got to be something entertaining. I'm not going to see Simeone ball, but it's not quite prime Guardiola either. I'd say it's a
Genga pressing.
Yeah,
you know how like Iraola plays at Bournemouth now. You know, a bit of a plucky underdog, but they've grown into it. They're showing what they can do. They're doing well.
I like that. That's good. Yeah, we like Bournemouth on this pod. We're very jealous of Bournemouth. So not jealous, admiring. So we like that comparison. So I love that.
Yeah.
Ryan, if this pod was a Reading player, past or present, who do you reckon it would be? Oof,
that's a question. Someone with longevity and always delivers. I'd say I'm going to go with the Graham Murty because it's always reliable. Ooh. It's been the cornerstone of the Reading podcast scene for a while. And it's had a lot of appearances. So yeah, Graham Murty.
That helps cover another one of the home nations that we don't cover as well. So that's good. That Scottish taken care of to go along with the Welsh and English.
Ross, if this podcast was a football shirt, any football shirt, what would it be and why?
Oh my goodness. That is an excellent question. I'm going to go with this season's purple turtle kit because it's Reading themed. It's a little bit wacky and it's probably the result of alcohol. So we'll go with that as my answer.
It's about 8 o'clock in the morning for you, Ross. So I'm sure you haven't hit the sherry just yet. I hope not anyway.
Not just yet.
Yeah, good. I like that. We like the purple turtle shirt. It's good stuff. We're gonna kind of talk a little bit about just tactics, really, and the lads have kind of picked things that they're interested in, and I'm gonna kind of do my best to keep everybody in check. And it's not competition. It's not like, you know, Team Tom or Team Ryan or Team Ross or Team Me, for example. It's just having a chat about tactics because with the international break, it's quite nice to just focus in on a few little bits and pieces, really. So we're going to do that. Before we do that, massive thanks, as always, to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, who continue to prop us up in these turbulent times, shall we say, in RG2, that we're all currently experiencing. And hopefully this pod gives you a little bit of respite from what is going on at the club currently, whilst making you think a little bit. How about that? Imagine a podcast doing that. So we're going to get right into it after this very short break.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Right, Ryan, I got sent possibly the worst agenda I've ever seen for anything from Ross in a shoddy, shoddy WhatsApp.
Okay,
and he's just put your name, which of course is Ryan.
Yeah.
And he's just put the word pressing. Right. So, Ryan, the floor is yours, sir.
Well, I think the best place to start would be with an explanation of what I'm about to talk about. So a lot of Reading fans this season might have heard of the style of football that Ruben Southern's trying to bring, kind of this gegenpressing, or the word that gets thrown about a lot is counterpressing. Let's give it a definition in case our listeners weren't aware. Counterpressing is a strategy used to disrupt the opposition as soon as possession is lost. It involves aggressively pressing the ball and the opponents near to the ball with several players. The aim is to win it back as quickly as possible and create scoring opportunities from there. Obviously, you may know it's been made famous by the Red Bull system, and it's been made famous by people like Klopp. And this section, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to call it this, but I'm going to call it Red Bull Royals, because that's the style of football that we've been looking to bring this season.
Nice.
I've been...
Yeah, that's good. That won't get us sued, Ryan, so that's all good.
Okay. Just right. RB Royals. RB
Royals. Isn't Carabao a bit more topical with all the adverts,
well,
maybe?
Well, if I'm not back on the podcast again, we know why. So one of the most famous people that's used the gegenpressing style is obviously Jurgen Klopp. And a little quote to get us started on the section as well is, no playmaker in the world can be as good as a counter-pressing situation. And it kind of got me thinking of, obviously, what we've been doing this season and how many chances and sort of any goal-scoring opportunities that we've created from pressing situations. So I did a little bit of digging. Obviously, on last week's pod, which was fantastic, by the way, with James Oliver Pearce, he spoke about Reading having the highest pressing stats in the league. According to Opta Analyst, Reading have the second highest PPDA in the league, which is passes per defensive action. Just basically means we're not letting the opponent play as much, and I think Bolton are the one that tops us out on that. 39 turnovers this season we've had have ended in shots, four of which have been goals, which are, I think that's some of the highest in the league, and we've got the second highest turnovers in the league as well. And then if we're looking at individuals as well, Harvey Nibbs, fourth highest tackles per game, and that's for an attacker as well. That shows that obviously when we've got the ball in the when the opposition have got the ball and they're third, we're really pressing them high with people like Nibbs. Mukairi, surprisingly, has got the third highest tackle percentage as well. So the individuals are obviously performing very well within the system. And I know James spoke about sort of the idea of Ruben setting up the out of possession structure, and it is clearly coming through with the stats. I have a few case studies, which I'll quickly run through now. The first being Oxford away. I did a little bit of research. I went away to see if I could find any goals and see if I could...
Go away that day as well, Ryan? Just checking quickly.
I did literally go away that day as well, yes. So okay. I was there that day.
Perfect.
So obviously our goal from then came from Oxford's being on the ball and in their own half. If you look at it, there's a they're trying to set up into their attacking structure where they've got three at the back and they've got one player, where Nibbs and Kelvin E basically just press him. They set for him and they go together, which again, having a two-man pressure in that situation, it's harder to escape. It was a brilliant run from Kelvin. There was some brilliant individual play there where he's cut the ball back across very well, but the pressing situation that he found himself in was he won that ball, he worked really hard, got the ball to the byline, it came from an own goal, which we kind of forced. The defensive line was so out of place in the situation as well. The back four were pretty much all over the place because they weren't expecting it, and that is essentially the whole point of pressing.
Mm-hmm.
The second case study that I heard that I looked at was the second home goal. Second Exeter home goal. One thing that I noticed in particular in there was that Reading were very compact, and in the other situation that I mentioned in a second, we're almost using the touchline as sort of an auxiliary defender to try and compact that space as much as possible. In the picture, the Exeter player gets the ball right in the middle, and there's around five Reading players just around him, and we're basically the idea is to suffocate him, which we did pretty well. Vickers blocks the passing lane, Nibbs comes across and tackles him, and eventually, because the defensive line, again, so out of place where they're trying to set up into their attacking structure, they're so out of place, Nibbs has won that ball back, and he's put the ball across to Smith, who's in tons of space, and he scores. Yeah. There is another situation, which Reading have done a few times as well, which goals have come from. You might notice the fact that they're so quick to push down the keeper or so quick to press down a player that doesn't have many passing options. They did it for the Shrewsbury home game for the Reading's first goal. Kelvin E has sprinted down and closed the goalie down to force the long kick upfield so Reading can get that ball back quicker, essentially forcing them into the mistake. Reading then have a nice build-up, leads to Smith scoring, but again, we're trying to force the mistake. We're trying to force them into situations where they can either have to punt long or they're going to lose the ball to Nibbs or they're going to lose the ball to Mukairi or whoever it is. Another situation which was, again, a goal-scoring opportunity from a pressing situation was Bristol Rovers at home. Sam Smith's goal for that. Again, if you look back at that goal, that Reading are very much targeting that. They're boxing them into sort of the touchline down on the left-hand side. They're almost man-for-man. Savage has got sort of one player that he's trying to pick up, and then there's another one next to him, but Nibbs is going to come from nowhere. Nibbs wins that ball back and then sets Smith immediately, who scores. So yeah. Again, it's another situation where Reading are looking to set traps and blindside defenders by pressing in numbers, and then when they're trying to build that attacking structure, we're hitting them on the transition and we're scoring, and it's something that's worked really well this season. And to be honest, it's been really enjoyable to watch at points. And it's very, it might not be as heavy metal as what Klopp would be, but you can see how Salah has learned that from the Red Bull model, and the, how he's learned that from Ralf Rangnick and Hasenhüttl, and it's come across really well. And I think Reading have translated that really well this season. So
yeah,
that was my one tactical point.
Just, I mean, you made some good points there, notably the fact you've got all of the, you know, the German managers' names correct, which is what I couldn't do last week.
No, that was me who got that wrong last week. But
that was you, was it? I thought I didn't even attempt. Oh, yeah, because I didn't attempt
to.
Oh,
throw me under that bus. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, it's more like a truck, isn't it? Really?
Right.
Yeah. Just going back to Kelvin E, do you think that, I mean, obviously he scored what I would class as an absolute worldie against Cambridge this previous weekend. Do you think up until that point, because, you know, fans tend to be, if it's not right in front of you and it's not happening there and then they sometimes don't look a little bit deeper than maybe they should. Do you think he's been a little bit harshly judged for the work that he does on the ball, or rather doesn't do on the ball, versus the stuff that he does off the ball, if that makes sense? You know, in terms of the pressing and what you've talked about there. Because, you know, the Oxford game, it's like, why is he playing there? But it quickly became evident why.
Yeah.
Because he forced the point for us.
I'd say with Kelvin, yes, to a point. Some of the stuff he does off the ball is great, but he's, again, flatters to deceive a little bit on the ball. I know he scored a brilliant goal against Cambridge. I think fans do kind of struggle with the point of, as you said, if it's not right in front of him, the fact he's scoring goals, getting assists, if he's not doing that, it's hard to see what he's contributing. But Kelvin out wide on the left, he is a workhorse. He has been, like, the Oxford goal came from a pressing situation again, but I think sometimes, even off the ball, I haven't exactly looked into the individual statistics with him, but sometimes it doesn't always translate well to his press. I don't know if this is making sense, but what I'm trying to say is that I don't think he's fully there out wide. He's used to being up front, and while he's a good impact player off the bench, and while for the last 25 minutes he's coming on, he's causing a problem, when he starts there a lot of the time, I just don't think it offers the same.
Well, and I think what you said that's kind of interesting is picking out Mukairu as someone who had some pretty good pressing numbers when he was playing out left. So of the players, and I still don't think Reading have found really the best player to play out left for them this season, but of the players who have played there, Mukairu oddly is the one defensively who's been the best. Are there any other, I guess, question for you, Ryan, when you're looking into this? Nibs is the obvious name, who's a very useful presser. Obviously he's way up there in tackles for the whole league. Are there any other useful pressers in the Reading system that you kind of came across other than Mukairu and Nibs?
See, the two that I came across, which I think James spoke about a little bit, about the sixes pushing up into the midfield and pressing, was Wing and Savage. A lot of the time, for the Bristol Rovers home goal, Savage was the one pressing there. He's always full of energy and flying into tackles, and Wing as well. There was a situation, I think it was the Wigan Femi Aziz screamer, where Wing's the one that initiates the pressing. He basically just sprints at him and just sprints at the player on the ball. Them two in particular, it's amazing, because like if they beat that press of Wing and Savage and they knock it around them, all of a sudden there's a gaping hole in our midfield. But it's amazing how quick they are at both just kind of tuning in. They go, right, ball. It's kind of like they've got one mentality where it's just like, ball. And half the time it does work out, but I thought that was very interesting, because it can be risky. Don't get me wrong, we're exposing the back four by them sprinting forward. But yeah, Wing and Savage for that, especially.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about getting like a duo, like you know, in a dream scenario, which two players would we want to get on the pod? And, you know, Ross mentioned Nibs and Smith together. But for me, I'd love to get Lewis Wing and Charlie Savage on here and just talk about how they, well, to reinforce my own personal agenda, really, but how they kind of complement each other, because they play really, really well together, I think. And they're only going to get stronger. And, you know, the hope is that we can keep both of them next year, and they kind of, I say cement, because they're pretty much there. But obviously, Craig is kind of around the squad as well. But for me, those two are fantastic. You know, really, really good. And the way that they work together is great in terms of the pressing. And as you said, you know, James talked about it a little bit last week. Tom, have you got anything you want to? It's like news night. Have you got anything you want
to
say?
Would you like to join in?
Have you? I just, you know, as kind of Ryan said, anything that kind of stared anything in you at all about the pressing, because it's, you know, he brought some really good stuff there, and I saw that stat in a week about Nibs and the tackling, and that kind of blew my mind, because it's not something that you associate with, really.
Yeah.
Anything you want to put him on the spot for, Tom?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're just going on about winging Savage. I sort of thought, I was watching, what was it, Man United v Liverpool last week, and I remember seeing Bruno and Mainoo sort of in a not a dissimilar way. You know, one's older in winger, Bruno, plays a little bit more advanced, but in build-up, they're the ones dropping more into the back four, whilst the younger one goes and presses. Obviously, Savage, only about, I think he's 20, 21 years old. Lots of energy. Presses really, really well. And even though he's typically a more, you'd say he's more defensive than wing, doesn't get forward as much maybe. It's just interesting to see how he's using that press.
Yeah,
it's not something that I think to start with, you know, for me in terms of that. I say not obvious, that's not quite right, but it certainly in recent weeks and months, the press has become a lot more evident in terms of the energy in the squad. And obviously that, you know, for me, that always comes down to a basic in terms of confidence and having the, you know, the strength and the, you know, the mental capacity to go and chase those balls and put pressure on the opposition. And we weren't doing that, you know, certainly up until Christmas. So
right. It's
been really, really nice to see that shift.
And overall, you know, Ryan, you've Ben, I'll just say, overall, the results have been we shifted to a completely different style of attacking, and we've gone in, I think we're the fourth best attack in the league on XG right now. So we've changed the style of attack completely. We've scored more goals this season than we scored all of last season in more games. So I think we're at 1.4 goals a game right now versus one last season. So overall, we've changed the style of attacking, you know, using that pressing as a weapon. And I think it's worked out for the better overall.
Yeah. Good stuff. Thanks for that, Ryan. That was really good. And, losing my voice already. It's not good, is it, on a Sunday? But yeah, no, really, really positive stuff. And don't go anywhere, because I'm sure we've got questions for the other lads. So, we're going to take a very, very short break. And then we will come back with Mr. Tom Hill.
Keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Right, this is where the agenda gets even more vague, because Ross has literally just written Tom build up.
Yeah.
So I'm going to let you build up on your own build up, Tom. Go for it.
Yeah. Well, it's more about like the sort of shape we are in build up. So if you think back to earlier in the season, we struggled so much, and been having a look through my past articles, just the ones come up, Fleetwood at home, you know, one of the weakest teams in the league at home. And some of the screenshots are just awful, really. We're so compact. We're not using our width at all. The fullbacks are way too deep. I think it was Guinness Walker who was playing. He would think is even more attack-minded than we usually have, but he's almost joining in with the centre-backs. Midfielders are way too deep, and that just makes it so easy to bait in the opposition, cut off the passing lanes, and we have no option except to boot it long, really, which is what happened quite a lot. But then you move into... Well, since that game, since the move away from the 4-2-2-2, we thought, I know this is a bit like wishy-washy saying shapes in build-up, but it's sort of a 3-1-3-3 with the centre-backs and one midfielder, which is usually wing in the back line, and then the other midfielder in the defensive midfield. So, yeah. Then with the Nibs and the two fullbacks higher up, and then the usual front three. As I said earlier, we weren't wide enough. Now the fullbacks are really wide. It's Mola and Dorset at the moment. Yedom obviously used there a lot as well. And that allows them to come into midfield. We've seen Mola, especially in the 10 position, quite unorthodox, but I think you mentioned last week with James Oliver Pierce, he's good at using his body, getting in the way of things and latching onto long balls. So yeah, in terms of like how we actually build up in that shape, we usually have Savage in that DM spot, and we're really good at playing like fast vertical balls into Nibs. And then because we only have that one midfielder, because Wings dropped into centre back, we'll have Kelvin and Makairu drop into midfield, like not necessarily inverting, but because we've got the fullbacks wide, they sort of have the authority to do that. We've seen that. I think it was, who did we play last week? Oh, I can't remember. But anyway, I remember mentioning in my piece, Ahib Ashman was really good at coming into midfield, leading a player away, and then we got a straight pass into Nibs, creating a scoring opportunity. So yeah, but then also when that's when the ball's sort of in the middle with Savage, but then we've got when Wings got it in that half space at right centre back, he's really good at long balls. We've seen it a lot of times. Example, Oxford at home, he plays a long ball over to Smith, he latches onto it, possibly offside, who cares, he scores. But just in behind him is Nibs, who goes the other way to him, takes away a couple of the centre-backs and gives him the space to do that. Obviously, this system does have some flaws. When Ahib Ashman plays, for example, I said he can go more centrally, but then sometimes Nibs can go a bit out wide, and then we have no real attacking midfielder. And obviously, when we're playing stronger opposition, we might want to play Craig because of his defensive abilities, but he's not really as good as either of the other profiles at those line-breaking passes and long balls. But I think one thing that we've improved upon, not just since the move to 4-3-3-1, but in the past few weeks, was, like James Oliver Pierce mentioned, wing moving into that central midfield position, just to prevent against counter-attacks, really. So, yeah. Occasionally, we've got sort of a bit of a different profile when Dorset plays, because he's more of a centre-back than a winger, if that makes sense. Because then we've got Savage in DM, and then a midfield of Elliot, Wing, Nibs and Mola on that right, with Smith and Aziz further forward. Personally, I prefer that a little bit more, because I just don't think Dorset's as good going forward at crosses as, say, Mola and Yeardom, really. Mm-hmm. But it does give you that three in midfield to pack it out a bit more of Savage, Wing and Nibs. And we've been very lucky, really, this season, all playing centre-backs. You know, think back to previous years when Tom Holmes and Dean this season, Hutchinson, but they're not really as good at those wide positions. Then when we lose it, we can't recover, we can't really stop the counter, and they're not as good as those spring passes out wide. So, yeah, there's my 50p.
That's a good point about the fullbacks, like a really, really good point, because, you know, we seem to be focusing a lot on Oxford away, and it's a good example of kind of, for me, not just the kind of the change in formation and setup, but also the mentality shift, because first half particularly, you know, where we were, well, stood, should have been sat, but stood, you know, Dorset was going forward, but it was almost like he was on a string, like he would get only to a certain point and then go backwards, and we'd lose the ball.
Yeah.
And, that, you know, for me, because Savage wasn't in there, there wasn't the energy or the, you know, say composure, but there was that missing bit in the middle there to try and recover the ball. I mean, I want to kind of ask you, really, Tom, about Mola in terms of his performances over the season, because we said time and again on the pod, you know, I think Ross called it the redemption arc for him as a player, and that's somewhat true, because when he joined, it's like, I don't think this guy's ever played football before in his life, with all due respect. But actually now, he's one of the first sort of, you know, names on a team sheet. Why do you think he's been so successful in that particular role of recent times?
I'm not sure, to be honest myself. It seems like this sort of slightly strange thing that Sellers has done a few times this season. He'll have a player play for a few games, then just cut him out completely for a few weeks, obviously nearer the start, that was McIntyre, Holmes and Carroll, one of which never returned. But when they did return, certainly Holmes was much improved after that. I'm not sure what they're doing on the training ground to make that better. It's possibly attitude, but it's also maybe because Mola's playing on a preferred side. We don't know too much about him because he hadn't really played many games before he came to us.
As well, they seem to have like identified attributes that they like. So I think Mola's quite important. I'd be interested in your thoughts on him in the build-up, because I think he's quite important in that, you know, he can go wide. We've seen him like get some crosses in going wide on either side of the field. I do think he's better on the right side, though. But he can also knock the ball down in the same way that Nibs can when the ball gets put forward, you know, vertically. So I think he's become a very important player. I think the coaching staff, I feel like this coaching staff are all about identifying qualities in a player that they can utilize somehow. And Mola, for whatever reason, they've worked out that he can collect the ball wide or coming inside, which I think has kind of been how he's improved a little this season.
Yeah, he's certainly impressed me in recent weeks as well. And I think all the players have, to be honest with you. Like, I think it's really interesting we're focused on different things here, but you know, given all the off field stuff and the kind of the roller coaster of mood that we've had in the fan base, you know, the players are coming out pretty well from this in terms of the support, and you know, they're just buying into that kind of not panic, but you know, the kind of the emotion and the feeling that we have as a fans, and they're really giving it as yeah. much as they can. And
yeah.
My hope really, and I'm sure you guys would agree and anyone listening to this, is that we can try and keep the squad as close as it is right now moving into next season, because I do feel that there's a lot of potential. You know, once we actually get, you know, the sheer basics that a football club should have in place, then we might be able to do something in this league. And they've coped really, really well from what was a horrendous start, like a really, really bad start. They've coped fantastically well in these areas. And you know, I think it's only right that we praise those individuals as well as collectives, really. Talking of individuals, Ross has got, well, it's a title to chill anyone's bones, really. So we're gonna take a little break, and we're going to come back with Ross and then kind of round off with any other thought nuggets that you guys have got, really. So we'll be back in a few short seconds.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Right, Tom, thank you so much for that. That was really, really good and really interesting to hear that about the build-up. And, you know, it's really interesting when we focus on these areas and look at the collective rather than individuals. Ross is going to blow that out of the water. And on the agenda that he sent me, and I keep going back to it because it was absolutely shambolic.
Right.
He's put Smith versus Carroll. Ooh. And quite honestly, at that point, I nearly pulled the plug on the whole thing. I don't have any particular issue with Andy Carroll. He's a lovely, lovely guy. I think he was probably a bit of a scapegoat, you know, at the start of this season. And, you know, as Tom said, he never came back, which sounds pretty ominous. The way you said that, Tom, is like, that was it. He was out. He was off to the horse farm.
Right, but, where's he gone?
Yeah.
What's Ruben done with
exactly.
him?
Exactly. No, no, he seems to be doing all right. Fair play to him. Ross, I'm genuinely intrigued to know where this goes. So Smith versus Carroll, over to you.
I'm not.
Sounds like a low-budget court drama, doesn't it?
Even I am not entirely sure where this is going, to be perfectly honest with you. So we'll see where we're at in 10 minutes' time. But, yeah, Andy Carroll scored last week. This is why this is on my mind. He scored in a 3-1 win for Omion against Angers. And both of those teams have fun names to say, so I thought I'd bring that up.
So you nailed that pronunciation though.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So Carroll, obviously he started the season for Reading, but was then banished to the shadow realm, has not come back. He's been in France. He's got 13 starts, 4 goals, 25 appearances for Omion. But I thought there would be not bad, right? Like he's yeah. doing all right. He's having a nice time. But I thought what would be quite.
Are you talking about Andy Carroll's stats, Tom, or Ross's pronunciation of the French
Well, it can be team, either. Yeah, it's progressive. Yeah, on the
well, it was Carol Starts, but that's not bad either. Yeah.
Right, right.
Say it again, Ross. What was it?
Omion, isn't it? Omion. I think that's where it is.
I thought it was Amion.
Amion. It might be. It's probably Amion. Yeah, I don't speak French. Is the issue? Anyway,
it seems like you do.
Well, not enough to learn what's going on with Andy in France. Basically, what I thought would be fun to do would be to compare Andy Carroll to Sam Smith. Now, when I decided to do this, I thought it would be kind of like comparing how different players attack the lone striker role. You see it all the time these days, right? Like, it's pretty rare to see just a traditional, like, two-striker, two-center-forward thing going on anymore. Come to find out, though, when I go back and look, I don't know about you guys, I've memory-holed large parts of last season. We were often playing in a 3-5-2 at points. And the points that Paul Lintz remembered that Lucas Joao existed, Reading are actually playing him on the right side of a 3-5-2, which is kind of interesting. You see Yaku Meite used there, Shane Long never used in the right position, but just kind of interesting. So I thought this would be a more direct comparison for lone strikers. It's a little bit off. Andy Carroll was playing on the left side of a front two fairly frequently, but he did do a little bit of that lone striker.
Can I just jump in there? Those three names that you've mentioned, I can't get my head around the fact that was last season.
They were on the team at the same time.
Doing this research, the amount of players, I think the only player who was consistently in the lineup last season was Yeardom, and the rest of it has just completely changed.
Crazy. I'll be honest, I think I blanked out from about January to the end of the season because it was just
I still can't believe that Jeff Hendrick managed to play basically every game in the championship, the standard that he was.
It's another remarkable.
Paul Wintz should never be a manager again, in my opinion.
He'll be back.
He will, yeah. Well, so I thought it'd be interesting to compare how they played anyway. So Smith right now, Smith sitting on 11 in 27 games. He scores every 204 minutes. Carroll last season got 9 in 30, scored every 211 minutes. The reason those are close is because Carroll got subbed off a lot earlier, very frequently. So Carroll was averaging less than 70 minutes a game in the championship last season, obviously coming off quite a lot. It's also important to note that they're playing in very, very different game plans. So the closest man to Carroll was often another striker or somebody even deeper than that, because Carroll was dropping deep a lot, is what I learned looking back at last season. Carroll was actually getting more passes off per game than Smith, which seems odd. But he was doing it from really, really deep. And he was kind of being involved early on in the build-up. And if he was going to shoot, he wanted to shoot first time. A lot of his shots are, he'll play the ball out wide, and then Redding will cross the ball back in, and he'll have a first-time header, obviously, back in. So a lot of Carroll's shots kind of came like that. Smith, while he's still a pretty big lad, he's obviously not Andy Carroll-sized. Not many of us are Andy Carroll sized. So Smith, 6 foot tall, but he can use the ball on the ground a lot more as well. So he's kind of been much more useful, taking a couple more touches to get his shot set, or he can even take the ball and use it for assists, for creative play and things like that. So basically what I found looking at Smith and Carroll is that neither player is getting a whole lot of the ball, both players averaging around 27 touches per game, but Smith was getting way more shots, way more touches in the box, and much more progressive action around the box than Carroll was. So Carroll's getting his touches back towards the halfway line, whereas Smith is actually able to keep the verticality throughout the game, not get frustrated with the small amount of play that he's actually getting, but then do something with it. So when I've been watching him this afternoon, especially, we see a lot of the time whereby if he doesn't think he's going to get that shot off within the first or second touch, he'll take a turn towards the outside and he'll look for the cross. Smith's got lots more crosses than Carroll. Lots more progressive carries. Sorry, Ben. Than Carroll had during this season. So just kind of like a more productive forward overall. And I think it's just through that that sort of versatility that comes with Sam Smith. I was actually more impressed with Carroll through looking over his stats and things and watching him play last season than I thought I would be. From what I remember is Doom and Gloom and Port Vale away. It wasn't that bad, but Smith, I think, is a player that allows us to do a little bit more, and obviously helps out with what Ryan was talking about with the pressing as well. So interesting comparison, but I'm glad we are where we are, basically.
A more progressive player.
We're 39 minutes into a podcast about tactics.
Yeah.
And we've only used the word progressive once.
Yes.
Which I think is pretty good, actually. I'm pretty chuffed with that. So yeah. Thanks to everybody for buying into that.
That's all right.
Banning of the word progressive. Genuine question to any one of you, actually. you know, if you had the choice, right? So we know about Andy Carroll. We know what he can do, what he can't do. Same with Sam Smith. We know what he can do, what he can't do. You know, largely because Ross has reminded us very eloquently of their strengths and weaknesses. Who would you rather have if world was your oyster and they were the only two strikers you could have in the world, for example, who would you rather have, Carroll or Smith, and why? And that's to anybody.
It depends what Carroll we're talking, because if we're talking Andy Carroll like Newcastle Championship days, I think it's Carroll, because there's a reason why he did go for 35 mil. But if we're talking Carroll versus Smith now, it's Smith every single day of the week and five times over. Because yeah. Carroll can't run and Smith can, and it's very nice seeing a ball playing in behind and not looking at it thinking, oh god, we've got to watch Carroll chase after it. It's Smith who can get on those. So yeah, a prime Carroll probably, but for the last however many years, probably since Carroll was at West Ham, Sam Smith.
Yeah.
Just more complete.
Definitely agree with that. Smith is, he's just like light years better, I think, now. Well, in the current state he is. Andy's from around where I'm from, so another reason to like him for me.
Do you know what's funny? I always think of Andy Carroll as the most left-footed player ever. And obviously he did have a real swinging hammer of a left foot. But Smith this season has actually scored more, like a higher percentage of his goals from the left side with his left foot. Andy Carroll, because of his large bonds, his famous bonds, if you will, just gets like quite a few headed goals. So Reading obviously had more crosses per game, more headed goals as part of their goal makeup last season under Paul Ince, if you can believe it. And Carroll was a big part of that. So it's kind of interesting. I often tend to think, I mean, maybe that's silly. Like, obviously he's a good aerial presence, but I often think of him as very left-footed. And yet Smith is the player who scores more with his left foot.
Can I ask?
So you're honestly
saying
that when you think of left-footed players,
yeah,
you think of Andy Carroll over there.
It wouldn't be my first choice.
Well, I mean, I think of Leo Messi first, but I'm saying when I think of Andy Carroll, yes, I think of the flying ponytail, but I think of him swinging his boot through, you know, his big left-footed boot through the ball.
Fulham at home with the two disallowed goals, probably.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. See, yeah.
Yeah,
what was
Roberto Carlos is the one that you think of with left foot, surely.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, like, once you start bringing in Brazilians, you know, I you can't really compete with Reading players for the most part. What was what was your
Tom question? Was going to say something before I cut him
Yeah,
off.
Sorry.
Tom was going to say something much more interesting than what I was going to say. Go for it, Tom.
Well, I remember on the first day of the season, Port Vale lost 7-0 to Barnsley, famously, of which a large amount were set-piece goals, and our fan base were going mental over, we've got Andy Carroll, we're going to score. Then he misses the penalty and we lose 1-0. But just on a sort of a larger question as well, I remember when we got relegated, a lot of fans were saying, it's all right, we still have a decent squad. And the front three of Ejaria, Carroll and Ince was being thrown about a lot. We're in a rather different scenario now. So it's a question to anybody, really. But do you think they'd be doing better than Kelvin, Smith and Aziz, Ejaria, Carroll and Ince?
Oh, you'd need a different manager, wouldn't you? Because he couldn't. But none of those players. Ince actually could probably play.
Ince was good defensively at points. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just saying.
problem with Ince is he was counterproductive to the morale, I don't think people really like. Obviously, very talented player. I don't know what he's been up to this season because When players leave, I just forget about them. And it's not out of spite. I just can't be bothered. I can barely keep track of our own squad, to be honest. But within, you could just tell that there was kind of a toxicity going in, and it just never looked right. And there was that game where he had a massive go at Tom Holmes. And
Hull at home, wasn't it?
It just didn't sit. It doesn't sit right with me. And this squad, and that's backed up by, obviously, you know, people we talked to, and obviously we had James on the pod last week. But there just seems to be a little bit more of a kind of camaraderie with where they're at. And I think that adds a lot to what they're trying to do personally. Pound for pound, talent for talent, it's difficult. It is difficult because they're a product of their environment in some respects, and that confidence that grows or doesn't grow within those teams. But it's a very good question, and I will think on that. And I can't give you an honest answer.
I'll go out there on the line, and I will say under a Seller system, obviously this season, individual talent wise, I'd actually say Aziz is better than Ince. I like watching Aziz more than I do Ince, which is a sticking point. But honestly, the amount of times that you see Aziz this season, I know he was under a lot of criticism at the start, but now he's our best player by a mile.
That's really interesting, because I can totally see like them switching leagues in the off season. Not because Aziz is so much better than, like, I think Ince has performed at a higher level at certain points of his career so far, but just in terms of where they are in their career, I could see
they're going to switch leagues.
I could see Tom Ince being.
Did you just call it the off season?
Yeah,
because if you did, you got to go and put a pound in the box now.
All right, sorry, a pound in the dollar box. My bad, my bad.
yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, I think that'll be interesting. I can just see Tom Ince helming the next promotion push for Derby out of League One, you know?
Yeah, there is that. Ajari, obviously, on his day is better than Kelvinny in a pressing system. Obviously, he's not. I still think he's a better player than Kelvin. And even in a pressing system, I'd rather have Ajari there because he will just create some magic out of something. Well, when he did. And Carroll Smith, again, if we're talking current, Smith's better than Carroll. If we're talking all time, Carroll's better than Smith.
I think that's fair. I think that's a fair summary. Yeah,
good points, well made. It's this is why it's quite good to have these kind of very generic starting points, because it throws up this kind of discussion in a way, and it's definitely food for thought. And I think really it just shows you how different, or rather, it reminds me personally of how different this squad actually is. Yeah. You know, I can't remember who it was, but someone made the point about Yeardon being the only one who's consistent in the squad from last year compared to this year. And that's crazy, isn't it? Like, that everything has changed.
It really has.
You know, comparable, like, we're a lot more exciting to watch. I can't really make the point, but, like, it was Mel. So we've had a raft of new writers, of which Tom is one of them, actually. He's knocked up some great articles recently. Obviously, you know, Ryan's joined the podcast this season as well, which has been great. But Mel wrote about how enjoyable it was to watch, you know, this team currently. And she's right. You know, that there is a really, really good backbone to that team. They just need that stability off it to really elevate. And I've really enjoyed the last few games, I have to say. Like, even, you know, coming away from the game and watching the highlights has been fantastic. And normally, you know, particularly last season, be like, I can't wait to get out of here and just go home and forget about the football club. So there's been a lot of positives on the pitch, and, you know, certainly since the turn of the year, which is great. So yeah, it's difficult when you're looking at them like for like, as it is with any team, really. But interesting point.
One thing I will say on that, actually, is that about it being more enjoyable, there was always kind of this thing in the back of my mind that Reading fans would sort of enjoy the pressing style and enjoy the high energy style, because I remember listening to a podcast ages ago, and I remember hearing AD Williams speak to Steve Koppel, and Koppel went, we were doing pressing before pressing was fashionable. And that was one thing that kind of always stuck with me, that when I heard we were getting Sellers, it was like, okay, obviously the 4-2-2 didn't work out, but technically a variation of the 4-4-2. And I always thought, maybe that's going to make Reading fans just enjoy the football a lot more, because it's going to be a bit of a throwback to the sort of high energy team and never give up and never say die. And although we're not playing the 4-2-2 anymore, it is true. Like, this running team, especially in the lot, I'd say last few weeks, not the start of the season, the last few weeks, even the Shrewsbury game, obviously we went 2-0 down after 10 minutes, we kind of came back to the attitude of, okay, right, but we'll come back. And like, although I'm still not fully confident with the idea of Reading to do that every game, because obviously the Shrewsbury game, they didn't come back, but it's coming back into the idea of when I grew up, Reading was always, you never say die to the last minute. And it's kind of bringing that back in, which has been nice, I thought.
I mean, again, I mean, we could talk about this for hours, but I'm just, you know, conscious of listening time, really. One thing I'd ask either of you is, would you, if you were the Reading manager, so if you were, you know, Ruben Sellers or whatever, would you make any changes tactically to what we're currently doing now? Or would you go, no, it's working, just don't touch anything? You know, say, for example, you know, Tom, Ryan, Ross, whoever, you came in tomorrow and you had that squad to work with, would you leave it as is, or would you make changes?
I think that's a good question, because I think that's something we can come back to as well later in the season, once we know, you know, how these last seven or eight games go, and what that means in terms of whether we can keep all of our squad. Obviously, that'll make a difference. But we've spoken before on the podcast about, I think we need depth for basically every position. So I think this is, you know, we've built some sort of project, and now getting the depth and getting players that buy into that project is the next important thing. But I do think it's a good point, Ben, you know, like, how do we build from here? We've built a team that can get itself out of the relegation zone. How do we build a team that can get itself into the playoffs next is the question.
The one thing I would say on that is, maybe it's the sort of a football purist in me coming out, but I'd swap Aziz and Kelvin, simply because Aziz is left-footed, Kelvin's right-footed. I just think that the quality of crosses that we'll get from that will be much, much better. Plus, when you've got Kelvin sort of arriving at the back post, it's naturally on his left foot, which he's weaker at, and his finishing isn't, you know, it leaves to be a lot to be desired anyway, whichever foot it's on. So that's one thing I'd do, but I mean, I'm sure Ruben knows better than me.
See, I would be the opposite. I keep Femi on the right, personally. I like the idea of him cutting in. I get your point, like, with him being a left footer on the left side and sort of the crosses, but Femi being on the right side, cutting in on his left, I've always quite liked. I would, and this might be, I don't know how controversial it is, I would persist with Paul Mukairu out left rather than Kelvin. I don't know why, I just would. And then I'd have Kelvin as sort of a rotation for Smith. And I'd definitely 100%, and I don't know why it's not been done sooner, keep Elliot in the midfield, in the six. That would probably want to be, he would be added to the rotation with Craig Wing and Savage. I wouldn't keep pushing him out wide. He's a six, keep him centrally. And yeah, but if I was looking at the transfer window, the two areas I would look to target is left back and left winger.
I think, do you know what I feel like used to get done all the time and never does anymore? It is switching your right and left winger over and over again during a game to try and mess with the defense. And you don't see that super, super often anymore. And I wonder if it's because there's too much defensively going on for them to cover. But yeah, sorry, Ryan, go ahead.
I've actually seen that. I've seen Reading do that in the last few weeks. I want to say it was the Wickham game.
Okay.
That Elliot went out to the, or it might be Kelvin went out to the right and Femi came across the left, or it might have even been Cambridge. And I remember watching it going, oh, they've switched sides. And that was like the first time that I've seen it in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember obviously what happened from there, but I remember seeing that, oh, it might have even been Derby where they switched over. And I was like, oh, I haven't seen that in a while.
Yeah, yeah. It's just an odd little tactic that seems to have faded a little.
Yeah.
I'd say it happens more naturally with us, though. I've seen it happen as well. I think it happened a bit against Derby with Elliot. But because Aziz has that tendency to cut inside onto his left, carry on the run, Mukairu's done it a bit as well from the left when he was playing earlier in the season.
I'm quite happy that they landed at 4-2-3-1. Like, I think it's a really basic formation, but it worked. But like, part of why it is I like it is because of what you're saying. Like, people can drift across it and they can move across it in different ways, and so many players now are pretty two-footed. I think that technical skill in footballers across the spectrum has gone up so much in the last like 10, 20 years or so. And players can just play across the front anywhere. So yeah, I think it's just a formation that allows that flexibility nicely.
Yeah. Can I
ask, have to say, up until recently, I was very, very, very vocal and adamant about having always two up front, you know, very, very traditional, but seeing, I'm not saying it's perfect by any stretch, because it wouldn't be a League One if it was perfect, to be honest. And we wouldn't be, you know, even with the points deductions where we are in a league. But having that one up top in the way that we play with that has really opened my mind and eyes and kind of excitement to how we could do that, really. So, yeah, it's been really good. Final question before I let you all go. And I could ask Ross, but I know what his answer is going to be. So I'm going to start with you, Tom. Who is your favourite current Reading player and why?
That's a tough one. I think the only thing I'd say about this season is we haven't got, in my opinion, any players that are a bit rubbish, but you just sort of like them for no reason. Maybe it's their off-field demeanour or antics on the field. So we haven't really got anyone like that, which it disappoints me slightly. So just on-field stuff, really. I've got to say Smith. I think he's transformed the side from when, you know, we struggled having Vickers, Kelvin, Ballard up front at the start of the season. They're all young. They're all developing. But they're just not as physical. They won't win you a header, really. But they can run in behind, but that's what Smith can do. I think he's a bit of an all-rounder. And just does everything you want someone in League One to do.
Yeah, fair. And he's also the most handsome man in Berkshire. So there is that.
Absolutely.
There is
that. Yeah.
Ryan, what about you, mate?
I've just been thinking, and it was between two, but I'm going to settle on the one thing that I was really missing last season, Lewis Wing. Just a midfielder that's just so good at passing. He can score a screamer. He can run. He can press. And there's nothing that man can't do. And I'll put it out there, and I might be biased. He's the best midfielder in League One. He's just so good, isn't he? I just love watching him play. And he was one of those players that when he played for Middlesbrough, I had a weird like soft spot for, because I remember he scored a screamer on the opening day of the season once. And now I'm watching him and seeing him do this well is like, yeah, Lewis Wing. I would get him on the back of my shirt, but every time I do that, they leave, so I can't.
Yeah, there is that, I guess.
I got Ballard on the back of mine this season.
Oh, no.
Who have you got, sorry?
I got Ballard on the back of an away kit.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah. I think I'd like the day before he got injured as well. It was awful.
Oh, don't tell him that. He'll be after you, Tom. He'll be after you. A horrible injury, that as well. That was really, really nasty.
Not for a season ending.
Yeah. Ross, what about you?
I'm not going to explain it. I've just drawn a picture of a heart with an arrow between, and it says Tyler Bindon. American in my heart is what it says. That's all. Tyler Bindon.
Even though he mugged the nation off.
Even though he mugged us off, still Tyler Bindon. And I don't need to explain myself. I've explained myself enough times this season. Maybe I'm saving now my... I realized this the other day, you know, I've kind of like, there were times this season when I wouldn't shut up about him. And then there, you know, like in the last few months I've been, you know, I'll mention it, but like I'm quieter about it. We're about to get into end of season awards and I am fully about to get back on my high horse about this. So just, this is your small bit of prep for the end of the season, basically.
Fair enough.
I would love to see him on the pod.
With Bindon, like it's just gobsmacking that he's never really... I say competitive football, that's disrespectful to where he came from, but, you know, it's a massive step up to play, you know, in this country in terms of League One and the way that he's adapted to that. And there are times when I look at him and think he's been playing for sort of, you know, 5-6 years really and at a higher level too. So I can see why Ross really likes him, and he's got all the attributes to be a really top defender. Yeah, it's difficult. Like, I agree with you, Tom. There's no one really that you'd look at and go, he needs to go. I know, obviously, people have said Button, but again, he's a really nice guy. And I know that people listen to this game, it doesn't matter if they're nice, but it kind of does in the current condition and the way that we are. Like,
after what we've been used to.
There are things that he does well.
I think it matters in the lower leagues too, if you're nice. I don't know why it just like when you're like Reading, you're not, you know, Arsenal, and your players aren't global brands. They are Sam Smith from down the road. I just think that it's the players being nice is much more important.
Definitely.
Anyway, welcome. I hope this has been a good tactics podcast. Players should be nice. That's we our really like that's players. Our primary thesis.
Yeah, we've just destroyed the arguments, that, or not the arguments, but the points you've all made by going, well, as long as they're nice people, then that's good. You know? As long as
he
they
might be rubbish, but he's a lovely
guy. Get us in the squad next year.
Yeah, exactly. Ridiculous, ridiculous.
I promise.
Listen,
nice
I hope you've really enjoyed this pod. I have. I was a little bit dubious when Ross said that he wanted to do a tactics pod. So I was like, it's not. You know, it's not about you, Ross. It's not about you in terms of actually what you want. It's about what the fan base want. But actually, this is a really good opportunity to, you know, given the international break and where we've been, and it's quite nice to have a little break and take your foot off the gas a little bit in terms of talking about specifics. So, yeah, I hope you've enjoyed it. And it's great to have you on, Tom, and obviously you, Ryan, and not so much you, Ross. But, you know, we move with that.
Cheers, mate.
We'll be back. We've got a couple of guests coming up, which is sort of confirmed but not confirmed yet. So I'm not going to start throwing names around yet. But in terms of a normal pod, doing that in inverted commas, like, you know, the episode 300 and what are we on?
I think it's going to be 375, and it's been on hold for like 2 weeks now. So
it has, yeah.
We'll
has.
Get there, whatever.
We'll be back. We've obviously got Northampton at home on this coming Friday, and then Bolton away. Monday. Yeah, it's coming thick and fast, aren't they, these games? So we'll be back at some point over that period. I was going to say the festive period, but you don't really describe Easter as festive. Yeah, that's Christmas. Anyway, I digress. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for coming on. Really, really appreciate it. I hope you've enjoyed it. Hope you've enjoyed listening as well. Big thanks, as always, to our sponsors at ZCZ Films. And we'll be back at some point in the coming days with a standard podcast. Have a good week, everybody, and we will see you soon. Come on, you Arse.